Hi, this is Dark Journalist. Today I'm excited to welcome Oxford scholar Dr. Joseph P. Farrell back to the show for part two of our deep discussion on transhumanism in the deep state. Now, Dr. Farrell's new book, Rotten to the Common Core, has just been released and examines the strange connection between the surveillance state and the education system. Now, in part one, we examined the role of the deep state in the 2016 presidential race between Trump and Clinton. In this special episode, we'll take a deep and serious look at the transhumanist movements and its efforts to control society through mechanization and build a culture solely dependent on artificial intelligence. We may even ask, will we recognize America in 2020? Here we go. Dr. Joseph Farrell, The Transhumanist Agenda, Common Core 2.0.
You cannot imagine a more Orwellian system. The transhumanists want to merge man and machine. There's your mineral atom. The transhumanists are wanting to create chimeras. This whole thing is a spiritual phenomenon, and it's anti-human. And Ray Kurzweil's wonderful vision of the future, there is no room for the transcendent or the sublime or the beautiful.
You know, when it comes to the promise of a new and improved future, it's not only the advanced technology that society gets, we also get the ethics and agenda of the people bringing it forward. In a remote place where political and corporate insiders meet to ponder their next moves, we can be sure of only one thing. The public is largely statistical to them, and that personal data mining will always be high on their list of priorities. From controlling public perception, rigging voting machines, or programming a young student's mind and then controlling them for life with debt, the question must be raised, what does artificial intelligence and transhumanism have in store for humanity? Let's go ask Dr. Joseph Farrell.
Dark Journalist will go there. The deepest issues, the hardest stories, the biggest secrets. The truth is never easy. With top guests, like former Assistant Housing Secretary Catherine Austin Fitz.
Catherine, who is really behind this media censorship?
Internet feeds go through satellites. Who controls the satellites? It's the Pentagon.
Legendary investigator Graham Hancock.
Graham, this cataclysm must have destroyed an advanced culture in our ancient past.
It truly was an extinction-level event. It was accompanied by massive animal extinctions. It was accompanied by huge and unexplained sea level rises, and then a sudden plunge of global temperatures.
Best-selling author Jim Mars.
Jim, don't these elite corporate owners need us around to buy their GMO food? Why would they want to depopulate?
Because they are eugenicists and they believe that they need to purify the human race. And if that sounds like the Nazis, that's exactly what it is.
Coast to Coast AM investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe.
Linda, how are we going to scale that wall of UFO secrecy?
Humans themselves are bypassing, are beginning to dismiss all of the policies of denial and lies.
Dark journalists will go there. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special summer discount available for just $39 for one full year. You'll not only receive access to the complete audio archives to stream or download at your convenience, you'll also get exclusive subscriber-only content and Dark Journalist event discounts. Sign up for our free newsletter to stay updated on the latest shows. Dark Journalist. Let's get the real story in 2016.
You know, we need dark journalists, so just keep doing what you're doing.
Well, hello everyone. Coming right into the fall here with this remarkable presidential election between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, and regardless of who your candidate is, I guess we can all agree there's a great deal at stake this time. Now, obviously, the mainstream media has anointed Hillary, but not so fast. It looks like the so-called deplorables have caught up with the machine, and we'll see what happens. Now, speaking of machines, the real crux of this episode is the rise of transhumanism and artificial intelligence. So the transhumanists are scientists like Ray Kurzweil looking to merge humanity with machines, and the so-called singularity, which is their idea of nirvana. We'll see about that, and a quick reminder here to visit darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter so you don't miss some of the major shows we have coming up for you this October. Joseph, it's great to have you back on the show for part two of our deep discussion.
Thank you.
Now, I want to start off with a new book, Rotten to the Common Core. Mm-hmm. It's just an excellent book, and I want to congratulate you on it. Now, you have a co-author on the book who is...
Gary Lawrence.
Yes, Gary Lawrence. Now, how did you hook up with him to do this expose on Common Core?
Well, I've had, because of my college days, I've had a number of people, and from my website, I have a number of people that are in education. And, you know, they're telling me these horror stories. My friend Scott DeHart's in education. I've got three or four teachers, public school teachers, in my website that are also in education. So, you know, I've maintained these contacts over the years. And when I first started looking at Common Core, there were a number of these teachers that were pointing out to me that the problem isn't the standards. The problem is the assessment process. Mm-hmm. And that's really the center of the book.
Yes.
Most people that criticize Common Core are looking at the standards. And the way I view it, quite honestly, Daniel, is that that's a bit of sleight of hand to misdirect people away from what is the central problem with this thing. And that is that you now have the standardized, computerized test taken to a whole new level where students are required to answer questions, and depending on the answer that they give the computer then comes up with an adapted question based on the student responses for their next question.
Right.
So in other words, it's like our old SAT, Iowa Test of Basic Skills, ACT on steroids, because each question now is supposedly being tailored to the individual student and his or her special personal, you know, whatever.
Yes, the comfort zone.
Comfort zone, you know, whatever. And what that does to me, that indicates that you are taking this standardized testing model and you're adding yet another layer of hidden, quote-unquote, experts who are now injecting psychological theory and personality typing and so on into the standardized testing process itself. So in other words, the old thing that we used to call it when you and I were in school, and we called it the multiple guess test, which is really what we were trying to do. We were trying to read the minds of these testers. What did they want, rather than what is the correct answer? And again, the problem is we're not allowed in standardized tests to articulate our reasoning process for why we're selecting the answers we do. And as we put out in that book, you look back at some of the questions that they've had on these standardized tests in the past, and the experts are hardly experts. They're dunces.
Uh-huh.
You know, the physics questions alone that I was researching when I read Banna Schlafman's book, I was thinking, you've got to be kidding. These people are that stupid?
No big surprise.
And you're adding to this level of stupidity and the lack of ability to articulate your reasoning process, you're now adding this whole new level of psychological personality theory to it. So it's the multiple guess question on steroids. This is not education.
Right.
All this does is it empowers an anonymous elite of test makers and their psychological theorists, who incidentally, when I started researching this book, they came up, Dr. Lawrence told me that when he was shown the first set of questions, they had come up with over 800,000 questions before this thing was even approved.
Whoa.
So, you know, the fix is in.
It definitely sounds like it.
And if you think it's bad now, just wait till if this thing goes through. You're turning over your children and your grandchildren's future in education to distant corporations that will control the narrative of information. And that, to me, is the scariest part of that. And in the process of controlling that information, they're collecting data. They're expanding the surveillance state from kindergarten to high school. And they're doing it at taxpayer expense. They're controlling the information narrative. And quite frankly, folks, we've just got to say no to the whole enterprise. Tell Bill Gates, if you want to help education, I just did a blog about this today, as a matter of fact. If you really want to help education, take your money, buy musical instruments for those schools, buy uniforms for their football teams or their baseball teams or what have you, buy textbooks, fund a library.
Yes.
You know, give it away. But the fact that they don't tells you that there's an agenda, and they want control of the information. They want control of the data. It's another data mining operation. It's another wealth harvesting operation at taxpayers' expense. And it has nothing in the final analysis. It has nothing to do with education.
Right. And one of the powerful concepts that I think you bring out really well here is this idea of tracking students for life.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a strange shadow because it makes me think of student debt, which sort of looms over this whole process of education.
Yes.
And it basically says, you know, you're in debt to us, so we can control you.
Yes.
But not only that, we can control the options that you have for satisfying that debt.
Yeah, exactly. It's a huge scam. In Catherine Austin Fitt's term, this whole thing is, as she puts in the foreword to the book, this whole thing is a scheme to harvest the last pockets of wealth that remain in the country. And what are those two areas? Healthcare and education.
Right.
It's a way of harvesting wealth from the middle class.
So that's taking what's left of the pie.
That's taking what's left of the pie. So they're indebting you not only to a they're making you not only consumers of a narrative, but they're making you consumers of jobs that they create, that you take out student loans in hundreds of thousands of dollars to go flip hamburgers at McDonald's.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because, by the way, we've shipped all the jobs to China.
Right, yeah. So, well, that's really where you destroy the middle class, though,
yeah.
Because first you send out and ship out all of their manufacturing jobs. And now you're getting ready to ship out all of their education jobs.
You ship out the education.
Right. Yeah, that's it. And the education part, along with the healthcare part, is really the last vestige of a job base that Americans have.
Yep.
So if you ship those out, you'll virtually have no middle class left, just this super wealthy class and everyone else here in America.
Yeah, and ultimately we know what happens, because when you get into that system where everybody's a consumer and there's nothing left to consume, even the elite class collapses.
Exactly.
It's either in a revolution or they self-destruct, but they ultimately collapse themselves when they collapse the very basis of their power.
So they're engaging in what can really only be called an amazingly destructive policy, but also an incredibly short-sighted policy.
Oh, totally.
That's
totally.
Just amazing.
Totally. Absolutely.
Interesting. Now, this reminds me of some of the unusual messages hiding out there in plain sight. And one of them is the Georgia Guidestones, of course. Now, this construction was put up by an anonymous builder a few decades ago, and it has all these rules listed on these pillars to guide humanity towards perfection. Now, one of these admonitions is about a reduced population to 500 million, I believe. Now, how does this population reduction figure into the thinking of these elites who want to centralize power?
Huge.
Okay.
Huge. We're going back to a basic philosophical presupposition that has been a part of the Western financial system since the end of Sumer and the rise of the ancient empires. Because what they have done is they've constructed a financial system on a philosophy of a zero-sum game in which there must be winners and losers. In other words, a closed system physics. Resources are scarce. Somebody's going to get a bigger part of the pie and somebody's going to lose. That's the financial system.
Got it.
Well, the problem is that in that system, the inevitable consequence is you start looking at population and population growth, because the more people you add to a closed system, the smaller the share of the pie gets for the people on top.
Right.
Okay. They have been making, this is so crucial, I mentioned this in my book, The Financial Vipers of Venice, and it's very important for people to understand that this idea of overpopulation has been around since the bankers of Venice first thought of the idea back in the 16th century. that the maximum carrying capacity of the world would be only 1 billion people. After that, it's all over for us, folks. Mm-hmm. And we've got to limit the population, by golly. Well, guess what? We've way past that.
Oh, yeah.
We could put all 7 billion people in this world and have gobs of arable land in the state of Texas and have everybody with a lot of space. We're not overpopulated. Whenever you hear overpopulation, you're dealing with people who are thinking in terms of a closed system of energy and a closed system of physics, and therefore they have a closed system of finance. The problem the elite has now is that the new technologies are more and more being leaked out. We're in an energy revolution. And when we actually have the ability to have cheap energy, or even more importantly, be able to tap directly into the zero point energy and use it as an energy source, there's no more closed system.
Right.
Debt money, petrodollars, yuans, special drawing rights, Deutschmarks, all of that is history.
Yeah.
And they don't have a model, because they've been locked into their way of thinking for so long. They don't have another model that they can propose. They don't know what to do.
Hmm.
And they know what the technology is going to do. It is going to absolutely end their power.
Definitely true.
So they don't know what to do. This is the other thing driving this. I think this is partly why you see the panic going on right now in Mr. Global's crowd. Not only are people pushing back and saying, no, your paradigm's all wet. We've been hearing this from you guys for centuries, and it hasn't happened.
I see.
And, Malthus just took the Venetian figures and booted them up a couple notches.
Yeah.
You know, nothing new here, folks. Nothing to see here. These people have been talking this game for centuries. They're nuts.
That is so interesting. And if we go back to Common Core just for a moment to illustrate how they offer just no inspiration for the future, it's such a far cry from Socrates yeah. and the ancient Greek tradition of learning. And I really got that from your book on Common Core, that they are out of ideas, as you just suggested, for how to control the picture. Because the advent of the technology is a two-edged sword. And of course, it's helped them to centralize, but at the same time, it has the potential to dethrone them mm-hmm. completely, I think. So with a realization from the bottom up, that could really happen.
Yep.
So in a sense, Common Core is the new back door where they can kind of regain control by mechanizing the student's mind.
Yes.
And then moving toward, making the student more machine-like. This is the transhumanist model.
That's the transhumanist model, yeah. And imagine now, Daniel, since you raised transhumanism again, imagine Common Core with people with computer chips implanted.
Yes.
You don't even have to sit at a monitor to take your standardized test. And imagine that now, coupled with some of the mind manipulation technology, brain manipulation technology, I should say, that we see coming out more and more into the mainstream. The ability actually to manipulate a person's emotions, to project voices or thoughts directly into their brain remotely. So this is a draconian, ultimately anti-human agenda. And I defy Bill Gates or any other advocate of all of this stuff to tell me how a computer is going to teach me to play a clarinet or a violin or to paint a picture or write a novel or write a symphony or even create the technology. I defy any of these people to show me how that's going to work. It's coming out of here, not out of the computer screen. So, I'm a stickler for this. We've got to get back to fundamentals. Get rid of teacher certification. Let teachers teach their subject matter in the way they and their local school board and the parents want things to be taught.
Oh, that's a great point. They're actually getting so far away from that. Now, the transhumanist movement has a wing that understands what I'd call occult transhumanism.
Yes.
And a part of their goal is to step up a level in that system. They literally, in esoteric terms, are attempting, with no comparable spiritual growth, to go from animal man, which presumably is us, to mineral, which is this merge with machines.
Yes.
And you address some of this in your transhumanism book.
All right, yeah. Dr. Scott DeHart and I wrote a book called Transhumanism, A Grimoire of Alchemical Agendas.
That is a really good book.
It's a good book. It's a very difficult book.
Yeah.
It's certainly the most philosophical book I've written, and probably is for my friend Scott. Because when we wrote that book, we wanted to write it in such a way that people would see what the agenda was. And we were struggling to find out how do we package it, literally. And I forget which one of us realized that what we were looking at was the ancient doctrine of esoteric man.
Right.
In esotericism, there are four atoms. There's the original androgynous atom, then you have mineral atom, vegetable atom, and then finally animal atom, which is us. And the whole goal of that esoteric alchemical school was to reascend from animal to vegetable to mineral and then back to androgyny, which is the ultimate goal here. Well, what do we see going on? Well, the transhumanists want to merge man and machine. There's your mineral atom. The transhumanists are wanting to create chimeras, you know, put a little plant DNA or whatever into us. So they're engineering these old stages. And what I think is really interesting, the strangest thing of all, you know, is this androgyne that is at the top of all of this. And what do we see going on in our culture? We've changed our language from talking about human sexuality to genders, which is a linguistic property. I keep driving this point home.
Okay.
Because a linguistic property is a property of language that gets confused in people's minds with sexuality.
Definitely.
You know, we see this in our society. We see this whole esoteric agenda driving at us down the freeway full force. You know, and I hate to tell people, the light at the end of the tunnel is a train.
Right.
You know, thank you, Jordan Maxwell, for that one, because that's what it is.
Well, the Caitlyn Jenner thing is a fascinating experiment for them, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I want to clarify here that we're discussing these contrived cases and not referring to regular people with personal struggles around identity. Mm-hmm. This is more about what these forces in societies do and how they manipulate trends that are actually happening.
Right.
So in this case, they took someone who was almost a Muhammad Ali type of hero, Bruce Jenner,
right,
so Olympic star, and people knew him for years as a fixture in culture. You know, he was on the Wheaties box back in the day. So super male athlete, and then a sudden transformation here, and on the cover of every magazine you can imagine, here he is as Caitlyn Jenner.
Yeah.
Now, when I saw this, I remembered the androgyne level, and I thought to myself, oh, you know, this is their way of cheating their way up that esoteric cult ladder.
Bingo. It's a linguistic cheat.
Yeah.
You know, it's as old as Gnosticism itself. And again, going back to Common Core, how do you signal your subscription, your consuming of a narrative? Well, you signal it by the language you adopt.
Mm-hmm.
That's your assent to what they're telling you. So in other words, I make it a point to avoid any gender neutral language. I still refer to people as mailmen, congresswomen, chairman, you know, chairwomen, actor, actress, author, authoress. You know,
yes,
I still do that very consciously and deliberately. I'm not going to allow them to tell me, number one, how to use the language in service of some sort of warped political cultural agenda, the end result of which is total confusion.
Yeah, right.
I know gay, lesbian and transgendered people, you know, to use the current phrase, that are totally against all of this stuff.
Yeah.
Because they see where it's going.
Oh, I think it's particularly bad for those communities.
Yeah.
When you get right down to it. Now, what I find fascinating on the transhumanist side is these esoteric man levels that you spelled out and that these people are obsessed with, apparently. The different stages of Adam.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, they need to make that androgynous idea, mm-hmm. Which they're shooting for to make them all-powerful, sneak into everyone's psyche as a cultural norm.
Yes.
And again, not caring about people who identify this way, genuinely. But more because this is a backdoor for the transhumanist ascension by rallying the culture to accept these concepts. That's how they're making their play.
Right. And how do you do that? Education.
Yeah.
And you do it by driving that narrative into the schools from a very early age. And, you know, now they've got the perfect tool. Let's just give everybody the same standardized, individually adapted, computerized test where you signal your assent to the narrative by the answers you select and the language that we use to frame the question in.
Yes, they're controlling the context there.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing you did in the new book is actually show how education has devolved under the control of these elite opinion makers. And you did it by showing the extraordinary work of people who are not a product of their limited idea of education and their whole education system. Can you get into that a little bit?
Daniel, you know, we began a chapter in the book just listing a bunch of names. John Locke, Thomas Aquinas, Fanny Mendelssohn, Clara Schumann, Ayn Rand, Alexander Hamilton, Benjamin Franklin, Albert Einstein, Diego Velázquez, on and on this list went. You know, artists, scientists, literary people. This list went on and on.
Right.
And at the end of it, we said none of these people went to an American public school.
Hmm.
None of these people took a standardized test. And they are responsible for our philosophy of art, our philosophy of beauty, our political institutions, our law, our jurisprudence, our music, our literature, our science. And none of them took a standardized test. None of them went to an American public school where teachers had to be certified in teachers' colleges, where they learn more about educational claptrap and methodology than they do about the discipline they're supposed to teach.
Right.
And they were educated. And that says it all right there. That's the indictment of this whole system. We need to, I'm with John Taylor Gatto here. There's no amount of money. There's no tinkering with this system that will fix it. The system itself is the problem, and it needs to be scuttled. Take a hike, Mr. Gates. Thank you very much. We don't need your computers.
Absolutely. Well, it's fascinating because one of the things you've pointed out in the Common Core book is that in the so-called tailoring to the student, they have the ability to edit out important historical information. They could serve up abbreviated versions of core cultural texts. So someone could easily miss a crucial section of the Constitution, you know, with the suggestion, well, you only need these three amendments to fit with your particular profile and just ignore the rest of it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, don't like that First Amendment. Well, you know, get rid of that. You know, don't like that 14th Amendment. We don't need to worry about it. Yes, precisely. You know, I'm as against electronic books as I am against electronic standardized tests, because there is no canonical text once you turn everything over to the corporations and put everything into the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
There's no canonical text. I still pay all of my bills by writing out a paper check, and I refuse. You know, I get these invitations, paperless bills all the time. No way. Am I going to trust you with my records? This group of people, like George Soros, David Rockefeller, Hillary Clinton, with my records? No how, no way. And I'm not going to trust them with the texts, and I'm not going to trust them with the tests.
Well, this is the real danger.
Yes.
Which is the altering of the past to create a different version of the future.
Yeah, exactly. And if you have, and this is, to me, Daniel, this is the real danger. And I told people when the Common Core book was still in press, you know, what's this book got to do with the rest of your books? Well, read it and find out what it has to do, because it's directly related. But if you're going to take and put everybody on the same regimen of a standardized, individually adaptive test from kindergarten to high school, what you're doing is it's not only expanding the surveillance state, but you are also in a position to subtly manipulate the information and decision-making processes of those people just by the way that the tests are structured. And few people are going to have the cojones to challenge individual tests and questions and say, that doesn't make sense, that's wrong.
Uh-huh.
Why? Because, interestingly enough, because these tests are corporate, they're also proprietary. So in other words, you cannot even get a list of the questions that they're going to be asking.
Wow.
That's ours. Well, I say, if you're going to pretend to be in the public education business and in the government schooling business, teachers, principals, school districts, superintendents, and most of all parents should have access to those questions.
Right. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
That's a no-brainer.
It's a no-brainer.
I totally agree. Now, one of the questions we probably should answer here is, how do we explain to someone how Common Core interlocks with the national security state?
You noticed that one, did you?
Yeah. Well, the all-pervasive surveillance state is somehow embedded right there in Common Core.
Well, I'll tell you how. Towards the end of the book, I point out something very interesting about the Educational Testing Service in Princeton, New Jersey. That insufferably pompous, arrogant, nonprofit corporation that has presumed and afflicted us with these standardized tests, since the 1940s and 50s, actually the 50s, it was founded, I think, in 49, by a guy that was named Edward Chauncey. And, you know, what a piece of work this guy was, because he had as his goal, he and James Bryant Conant, the former president of Harvard, had as their goal with these standardized tests to take a national census and use these standardized tests as the sorting mechanism to create what they thought would be an oligarchy of merit. So in other words, they were deliberately designed to slot you and sort your future. And this is exactly what Common Core is designed to do. It's the creation of a system where you are going to be awarded in your career choice by the federal government and subsidies. And if you choose a contraindicated career choice from your test questions, you won't be able to get all of these wonderful benefits. But the national security state enters the picture, and I just was floored when I found this. The CIA contacted the Educational Testing Service in the 50s through a CIA front called the Foundation for Human Ecology. Okay?
That's a great one.
Yeah, it is, though. I mean, it's just so CIA. It's so Alan Dulles. You know, you can see him smoking the pipe and thinking, what are we going to call this? You know, we need to give it an innocuous, grandiose sounding name. You know, and this is what they come up with. Well, they contact the Educational Testing Service to see if their techniques and so on can be adapted for the purposes of mind control. In other words, the Educational Testing Service was intimately involved with MK Ultra.
Unbelievable.
And mind control. Now, folks, I don't know about you, but to me, that says it all. Right there. You don't need any more than that to tell you that Bill Gates, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Carnegie Foundation have not been about education. They've been about control.
Right.
And to control people's minds, the easiest way you do that is to control the information and the narrative and to make rewards and punishments dependent upon your submission to that narrative. So in other words, what I'm telling you is that the standardized test and the Common Core individually adapted standardized test on steroids, what it really is it's a loyalty test.
Uh-huh.
That's what it is. Do you go along with the agenda? Would you, Daniel List, answer a standardized test question? Who killed President John F. Kennedy? A, B, C, D, Jack Ruby. B, Lee Harvey Oswald. C, the Cubans, D, none of the above. You know, how do you answer that question if you're informed?
Well, the only one they'd accept as correct is Oswald is the only right answer.
Exactly.
But, you know, I've done a documentary on Oswald, and really, if someone does even a little research, it's easy to see that the idea of Oswald as the JFK assassin is completely false.
Absolutely.
So it is a real problem, because in that scenario, you'd be getting higher points for acceding to the official story.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. The yeah. official narrative. It's nothing else other than a mechanism to track loyalty to the official narrative. And I could go on and on. You know, I've seen tests like this. I had to take them. Who started World War One? Answer, Germany. Well, really? I thought it was Austria and Serbia.
Right.
On and on, stuff like this goes. And we put, you know, we read a book, an interesting book by an old friend of Albert Einstein at the Princeton Institute for Advanced Study, a mathematician by the name of Banish Hoffman. And I've written about Banish Hoffman previously in my books, because he was also a friend to Gabriel Krohn, you know, who I think was an electrical engineering genius.
So, oh, yeah.
You know, we have this little European mathematician in the Princeton Institute of Advanced Study, and he published a book called The Tyranny of Testing, all about standardized tests. And he lists questions in there of questions that appeared on the ETS, the Educational Testing Service's standard Scholastic Aptitude Test, the SAT, in physics, that to me were just mind-bogglingly stupid.
Right.
And he shows how mind-bogglingly stupid. The question was wrong. There were no correct answers. And the more ETS tried to defend the answer that it wanted, the deeper it dug itself into a hole.
Yeah.
And this is my problem, because with Common Core, you're not only setting up a panel of anonymous experts of a subject that turn out to be incompetent half the time, you're adding to this now a battery of anonymous psychologists, and I want to know who these people are.
Yeah.
But we can't do that. That's proprietary.
There's that theme again of a private company invading the public space.
Yep.
And having that deniability. And we know that this has worked for secrecy at high levels of government before when it comes to advanced technology, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But once we get into the corporations running it, you're in deep trouble, because we can't petition them for their private company secrets.
You can't do that. And on top of this, are we assured that there's no political agenda in these questions, especially given the history of progressive education and the people behind it in this country? At one point, we talk in the book about the fact that I think it was the National Union of Teachers or something had a meeting in Chicago in 1947 and stating their goals for what they wanted to see happen in education. And one of them was to prepare American children for world citizenship.
Wow.
And whoa, you know, they come right out and say it, but who's behind Common Core? Who's preparing these test questions? If we investigate them, are we going to find a Roy Cohn?
Exactly.
We know Bill Gates and what his political leanings are, you know? So again, this is another way not only of controlling the narrative, of expanding the surveillance state and tracking people and learning their personal habits and being able to make capital and prediction off of it at the taxpayers' expense, but it's also a way of, in my way of thinking, slotting people and using these tests as a social engineering mechanism to adopt agendas. This was precisely, again, this is why we put in the book what we did about James Bryant Conant and Edward Chauncey in the book, because that's what they intended these tests to do. They were a social engineering mechanism.
Yes.
Pure and simple. And we see the result. Johnny can't read. Johnny can't write. Susie can't do math. And we're concerned about political correctness and not offending anybody. We have more time wasted on all of this. And we're not even at the teachers yet.
Right.
We haven't even dealt with the teachers yet. Because under Common Core and this assessment process, what happens to the teacher? Well, they become essentially what they are now on steroids. What they are now is they're constantly teaching to the test.
Mm-hmm.
They're not teaching their discipline. And under Common Core, the teacher is going to be so, I think, denigrated in position that they're going to become little more than proctors for an exam that's under constant revision, under constant assessment. And what this ultimately is designed to do is failures in the system, just like we say in the book, failures in the system can be blamed on the teacher so that they can impose more of the system, gain more control, blame the teachers again, and ultimately you're going to get rid of teachers altogether. You're just going to have a robot.
Yes, right, right. Well, that is what they really want.
Yeah.
So they definitely want to reduce the teacher first to a clerk, an implementation clerk. And then the teacher goes from that to just basically becoming obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
So you can then outsource all of those jobs to the software. So you can say, you know, you save money. But what you've actually done is gain control because you're implementing the Common Core control system.
Yes.
And the effect of that on the students is they're becoming conditioned to accept their instructions basically from a machine.
Yeah, it's the extension of the stimulus response philosophy that set this whole progressive system of education up in the first place.
Right. Joseph, absolutely fascinating. Let's plan for part three right now. Dark Journalist subscribers will get that next week and take advantage of that discount now before it ends. Joseph's new book is Rotten to the Common Core, available at Amazon or GizaDeathStar.com. We're going into overtime here. Part three is coming up, and we're going to hear about the transhumanist agenda taking over all aspects of society with the artificial intelligence grid. So, Joseph, hang in there, and let's go deep for part three.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me for this fascinating episode with Dr. Joseph Farrell on the transhumanist agenda and Common Core 2.0. You can find more special reports, deep interviews, and documentaries at www.darkjournalist.com. You can also subscribe here to our YouTube channel to receive the latest videos. See you soon.
Subscribe to our newsletter at darkjournalist.com to stay updated on the latest shows. Go deeper with Dark Journalist. Subscribe now and you'll have access to the complete audio archives to download or stream at your convenience. Receive advanced updates and discounts on Dark Journalist events. Enjoy exclusive subscriber-only content. Go deeper with Dark Journalist. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special summer discount available for just $39 for one full year. Dark Journalist, the truth is never easy.